Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 48, recorded June 23rd, 2010. It's just a cron job away. This Week in Google is brought to you by iStock Photo, the web's original source for royalty-free stock images, media, and design elements to help you get creative with your website or blog. Check out the special offer at iStockPhoto.com/twig. And by Carbonite. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com. Offer code TWIG. And by GoToMeeting. Visiting important contacts from New York to LA and Bangalore to London is time-consuming and expensive. Have meetings online instead with GoToMeeting for your free 30-day trial. Visit GoToMeeting.com/TWIG. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show that covers the Googleverse, the cloud, and all of that stuff. Jeff Jarvis is on assignment. He's actually on a plane, stuck somewhere over O'Hare Airport. But good news is, of course, our very favorite Gina Trapani is here, as always.
Hello.
From smarterware.org. She's also the author of The Complete Guide to Google Wave at completewaveguide.com. Hi, Gina.
Hi. How's it going?
Going really well. You're not doing any traveling. Only one of you is allowed to travel at the time.
I try not to leave San Diego in the summer.
I don't blame you.
Perfect here.
Perfect. Beautiful. Yeah. And sitting in for Jeff, we're so happy to have Pete Cashmore, the man in charge at Mashable.com.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Pete. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
Great to talk to you. Mashable is a great site for people who are following. What would you say it's the new internet? Is that your beat?
Yeah, we try to cover consumer internet. So anything that's happening on the web, we got it covered, particularly social media stuff, you know, Twitter, Facebook, all the social sites. That's really our focus.
It really is the place I go to find out what's going on online. And in fact, you have your top story. We're very happy about this. I don't know how you feel. Pete's from Scotland. Was Scotland even in the World Cup?
No.
No.
So if you're Scottish, the tradition is to support anyone who's playing against England.
Well, good news. England did qualify, but so did the U.S. And by beating Algeria, thank goodness. And according to this story, you've been watching the Akamai, or Adam actually has been watching the Akamai Net Usage Index. It could set a new internet traffic record.
Mm-hmm. There was also another game going on at the same time, so it kind of doubled up on the...
Is this people streaming the game, or is it what is it?
I guess everyone going online to check out what the buzz is on it right now.
At its peak, 11 million visitors per minute to the World Cup site. Is that where they went? The World Cup hub? I don't know. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and everyone's twittering about it. It was 6% of tweets for about that. So it's pretty crazy. Wow.
They have a meter. If you go to this site, they have a meter that says the world news consumption, and there's light, normal, and heavy, and it's pegged. It went all the way to 11. 190% above normal.
Well, and of course, it's causing Twitter to go down quite a lot these
What a surprise.
Past week. So that's more problems for them.
What a shock.
Their status blog was down today.
You're kidding.
I mean, it's a Tumblr blog, so it's really, it must have been Tumblr getting a lot of, but yeah, I tried to check the status and it was like, not available.
Talk about a cascading effect. So Twitter's down, so people go to the status blog because they've learned now that you go to the status blog, and they bring that down.
They started linking to the status blog from the farewell page. That's probably what it was, that Tumblr couldn't cope with that sudden rush of people coming from the farewell page.
So they need a status blog for the status blog.
And you need to put that on Google.
Exactly.
Somebody with a lot of bandwidth. That's pretty amazing. I've never seen Tumblr go down. That seems kind of unusual. So.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, they're pretty reliable.
Mm-hmm.
They may get a little bit of a brain drain soon. I see that this is kind of interesting. Posterous, which I love a lot. is it was originally it's a Y Combinator startup, pretty well financed, posterous.com. And I started using them when I was in China because you could email posts. So you could use an iPhone to mail a picture because I couldn't get to Flickr from China, Facebook from China, or Twitter from China. But I could always get to Posterous. And then you can send, so you email to Posterous, and then Posterous feeds out to your other social media sites. So I never thought of it as a blog or an endpoint. I always thought of it as a pipeline. But apparently they would like to become the next endpoint. They'd like to be Tumblr. In fact, they say over the next 15 days, Posterous is going to announce a different service daily that you can transfer your account from. So today it's Ning. So what you do is you enter your Ning credentials in at posterous.com, and it sucks everything, video, audio, pictures, and posts, and makes a Posterous page with everything automatically.
But Ning and Posterous are kind of different, right? I mean,
yeah,
Ning
it's an
is
interesting
like,
choice.
Yeah, yeah. Those are not two services that I would have said, oh, yes, I should transfer from one to the other.
Ning might be vulnerable because they recently decided to charge.
Yes, definitely. Low-hanging fruit, I guess.
Posterous is free, but you got to think that the next one is Tumblr because that's the most direct competition.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Tumblr. I've been using Tumblr for a while. I can see your reasoning though in China for wanting to email, but I got into Tumblr pretty early, and I just never tried Posterous, although it seems to be very popular.
I do Tumblr and Posterous, and in fact, I was having Posterous update Tumblr.
Ah,
so I was using Posterous completely as plumbing, almost like Yahoo Pipes, kind of.
I want a workflow diagram from you, Leo, for like all the places where you actually input your status updates and blog posts, and then all the places where they pipe.
It's impossible. I tried once. I sat down with OmniGraffle and I started, and there's so many loops and infinite, you know, circles, and oh, it was terrible. It was
you
terrible.
You should have one of your fans do it. kind of go through all your sites and figure out what's
who
posting
posts
from
to
it.
What.
And then, yeah. Google Docs is a good drawing tool. You don't even need OmniGraffle. See if
yeah,
you can,
really, just draw it.
Yeah.
Do you ever have that problem, Pete, with just like you've got too many presences online?
You know what? I just go to them manually and do them that way. I remember Scoble did that for a while. He'd like link them all up and he'd end up with dupes coming through when it went through one system and into another.
Yeah. So you make some enemies real fast that way. Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's kind of slightly annoying. And really, I don't know, the big ones are really Facebook and Twitter for us. So we just... You know, for Mashable, at least, we just focus on, like, manually updating all those things.
Oh, wait, you're huge on Buzz. You're the number one subscribed to feed on Buzz.
We use Buzz still. It's not top of mind for us, I don't think, at the current time. I think
that's telling.
Lost a little bit of sheen. We're getting a lot less engagement. It kind of dropped after the kind of the initial hype. For us, Facebook's a big growth place for us.
It might be, to be honest, it might be... I was following you on Buzz, and what was happening is it basically was a feed of Mashable. And I already get Mashable in my RSS reader, so I actually unfollowed you because it wasn't about engagement.
What we do on a lot of those is we ask questions, so we kind of engage
the
audience around it.
Yeah.
One of the problems when we do that on Buzz is it completely floods everyone's feeds with the replies, so it's kind of a catch-22 for us with Buzz. But we're definitely trying to do that engagement piece where we ask questions. It works really well for us on Facebook when we don't just kind of update with headlines, because we're doing it manually anyway, so it's not like it's actually a feed going in, so we can do whatever we want with those.
That's an interesting, that was actually probably what happened to me following Buzz was not so much, following Mashable on Buzz was not so much the number of posts, but the engagement.
Are you still using it actively though? Are you like reading everyone's?
In fact, I don't tweet anymore. I Buzz and then use Buzz to tweet.
Did you get rid of your Facebook account ever?
And Facebook's dead to me.
Okay.
Literally, it's dead to me. I'm going to Foo Camp this weekend. And Dave Recordin's going to be there. I think Dave Morin. And I don't know if I will be shunned, but I would love to engage in a dialogue. You know, the thing that put me over the top, I was talking about this on Net at Night on Tuesday. Well, they just did one thing that really pissed me off, which was take all my interests and make me join groups with those interests. Public groups. I thought that was just, and there was no way out of it. I thought that was unforgivable. It was like,
we had the option to delete them all, Leo.
Yeah, thank you. Options. Yeah, later. I could go back and delete them, right? But for a moment, they'd be public.
No, I think the choice was basically, we'll delete them or you can make them public. And those are your choices. And that was kind of part of a string of issues they had around that privacy stuff.
I don't know. You think I'm crazy?
I know. I think from, you got to do what you want to do. I think you're definitely, Facebook is really a big opportunity for you personally and for Twit. And, you know, it's your call if you think they've got some kind of ethical issue. That's completely up to you.
You get, you're saying this is very valuable to you. See, there's two prongs to this. For me, there's the personal disconnect that I really feel blackmailed with because there is nothing to replace Facebook. So all those people who were connecting with me socially, my old girlfriends, old friends and stuff, I had to disconnect from. So that was one. That was painful. And you're absolutely right from a business point of view. Although it's my opinion, that's less detrimental because there are lots of other ways we engage with our audience besides Facebook. So I feel like we can put ourselves out there. And frankly, I don't want to appeal to Facebook users. It's like, to me, it's like
Facebook users is everybody now, though.
Yeah, well, it's too bad. It's like AOL. I don't want to appeal to everybody.
Well, yeah, your audience, Leo, is pretty savvy. And I mean, they're more likely to be on Twitter or Buzz or you know, on the blog or an IRC, for example, you know, than Facebook. So I think it's probably less of a lost opportunity for Twit. But for Mashable, it seems like a no-brainer. There's no way. I mean, that Mashable couldn't be on Facebook. I think it's important that there's someone in the tech community who did what you did and kind of made a point of it and is going to have a conversation. No, I think that's good. And, you know, Fufu Camp is at one of those kind of contexts where you can have kind of an off-the-record, frank discussion. You know what I mean? And I'd be interested to know, you know, how that goes.
Well, I'll have to tell you off the record.
Well, yeah, that's true. I was going to say, is it ever off the record with you, Leo? I don't know.
No!
No! Are you going to bring your broadcasting stick to Food
the
Camp?
The first time I got invited to Food Camp a couple of years ago, I said, great, can I bring my microphone? And they said, what? No. And they uninvited me. And then the second time, I didn't respond fast enough. So this time I said, because I work weekends. I have a job. So I'm going to have to take the radio show off, and it's a big deal. But I really wanted to go, partly because I did want to engage with these guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you think that Facebook's benign and then they just got kind of caught in the crossfire? They misunderstood what they were doing or?
I don't, me?
Yeah.
I think Facebook does what's in Facebook's business interests, and occasionally that's not necessarily in the interests of the user.
Yeah. That seems pretty obvious.
You know, and I think they maybe did cross a line, particularly with that privacy update they did like end of last year. Where it was, you know, that dialogue box that kind of popped up and was like, hey, we're about to set all your stuff to public. You do this. Which is a little bit kind of pushing it. But yeah. I think they'll, you know, I really think the mainstream users don't necessarily either understand or mind too much the stats that they're showing in terms of growth. They didn't really experience it.
No, obviously not. And that's exactly why I don't feel like it's good for me to promote it. Because I have a lot of, you know, believe it or not, because of the radio show, I have a huge number of, I have over a million listeners of the radio show every week who are not geeks or lesser geeks. And I don't feel like it's right to encourage them. I was more concerned about them. For people like you and me and, you know, the listeners of this show, they know better. They know how to use Facebook without getting in trouble. I'm not worried about them. Oh, anyway, enough.
I think we should talk about Google.
Let's talk about Google.
Yeah, let's talk about Google.
So it looks like Google's won its case against Viacom. This just came out 23 minutes ago. This is from the official Google blog. Today, the court granted our motion for summary judgment in Viacom's lawsuit with YouTube. That means the court has decided that YouTube is protected. This is such good news, not just for Google, but in general, that YouTube is protected by the safe harbor of the DMCA against claims of copyright infringement. It validates the safe harbor rule, which is critical. The choice, really, of the court was to treat YouTube as a common carrier or as a publisher. And if they're a publisher, if they're responsible for the content on YouTube, that's a problem. With 24 hours of video uploaded every minute, there are not enough people in the world to vet all this content.
Yeah, that's great. That's huge. Really important.
Pete, you must have known about this because your finger's on the pulse.
Yeah, I think that's awesome news, actually. I was kind of surprised that it did resolve in that way. Obviously, everyone's on the side of YouTube there. But it was kind of, I don't know, sometimes these court battles seem to go the wrong way just because of lack of understanding about the new technologies. We saw it in Europe, and I don't know if that one was resolved. Do you remember the Italian situation where there was like a video
three,
put up?
Three YouTube executives are going to go to jail, as far as I can tell.
If they go to Europe, go to Italy. So I don't know. Sometimes they're a bit backward, but I'm glad that at least the U.S. is seeing the light on that one.
YouTube says, this is actually, it's Kent Walker, Vice President and General Counsel of Google. This is an important victory, not just for us, but for the billions of people around the world who use the web to communicate and share experiences with each other. This is the kind of rhetoric I often hear from companies. Our victory is your victory. But in this case, I think it's kind of true. We're excited about this decision and look forward to renewing our focus on supporting the incredible varieties of idea and expression that billions of people post and watch on YouTube every day around the world. In this one case, you know, they might actually be true. Now, there's an ongoing court case which is getting worse for Google, and this is the Street View issue, the collection of data from unencrypted Wi-Fi hotspots. It started in Germany. The EU is upset, and now the state attorney general in Connecticut says, we're investigating, and he hopes that 30 other state attorneys general will participate in this. This is getting worse for Google. There's no way Google loses this case. This one's pretty straightforward, because there's clearly no intent to use this stuff. It was the default setting on Kismet, the software that they were using. There's no valuable information, and most importantly, there's no demonstrable damage to the people who are suing, and you can't sue unless there's damage. But it sure is a blow to Google in the court of public opinion.
I think.
Go ahead, Jenna.
I was going to say, I mean, have they figured, I mean, what law did they break? Have they figured out what law did they break?
Maybe yet? That's what they're looking for.
What is the, you know, besides, what did they say, violating a reasonable expectation of privacy? I mean, there wasn't any demonstrable damage. Was it France that the government who started looking through the data and found that, you know, they found some passwords that had been transmitted?
That's right. Which
sometimes people transmit passwords over their wireless network when they log in.
Stupidly.
And they kind of, you know, flipped out about that. But Google wasn't collecting passwords, and it was like fragments of usernames and passwords, and, you know, that, you know, as the Street View cars rolled by. I don't know. This seems like such a weird thing for people. It just, there's no law. I just want someone to say they broke this law. This is what, and this is how they did it. And no one's been able to say that yet. But everyone's getting all up in arms, and we're going to keep investigating. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
We talked, you know, we always talk about this with Jeff because he's a, you know, this is what his new book, Public Parts, is about, and he's a kind of up on what's going on in Germany and how the Germans feel about all of this. I got an email from somebody who said, you know, you often act as if it's the Germans who don't like this. He says it's a few German legislators, court people. A lot of us listen to This Week in Google in Germany, and believe me, we don't have a problem with Street View. It's government that has a problem with Street View. So, enough of that. I think that they will see victory, but it sure is. I think people who don't know better are seeing this as another example of Google violating their privacy. We're going to take a break. We've got Pete Cashmore from Mashable with us, Gina Trapani from smarterware.org. We're talking about Google in the cloud. Before we go too much farther, though, I want to talk about a great way to do meetings in the cloud, online meetings with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a fantastic product from Citrix. It is simply put the easiest way to meet online. Now, you know, I can understand a lot of people believe that the best way to meet is in person. And I understand that, but believe me, you can't always meet in person, especially nowadays where we're doing business all over the world. GoToMeeting can take a conference call, which is kind of a necessary evil, and make it something visual, engaging, as powerful as meeting in person. I want you to try it free for 30 days. That's a $49 value. With it, you will get unlimited meetings, as many meetings as you want, as often as you want, plus absolutely free teleconferencing through VoIP or phone. And I use it on my iPad. It's so cool. There's a free iPad app. Here's how easy it is. You're going to go to GoToMeeting.com right now. GoToMeeting.com/twig. GoToMeeting.com/twig. You'll have the software installed in 30 seconds. It's just a little tiny Java program. And now, the next time you want to have a meeting, it integrates with Outlook and so forth, so you can send an invitation very easily through the mail. Or even while you're on the phone in a conference call, you can say, you know, I'd like to show you this, and give them the meeting ID, a little 9-digit number. They just go to the website, enter that ID, and suddenly, 30 seconds later, they're seeing your screen on their computer. Not only that, they can flip it around and show you their screen on your computer. So it's great for training, collaborating, as well as sales. 128-bit SSL encrypted end-to-end, so Google Street View will not see your meeting. You're completely safe. I love GoToMeeting. We use it all the time. I know you will too. Try it free. Do me a favor. GoToMeeting.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. So Dell announced this. Well, you know what? The big story. We should talk about the big story.
We should. Droid. Let's talk about the big story.
Do you know what it is? Droid X, right?
Oh, I was going to say voice, but okay.
Okay, voice is a big story too. Okay, we'll do Droid X, then we'll do voice.
Okay, let's do that.
Those are both, you know what, huge. I buried the lead again. Damn. So the Motorola Droid X, the announcement was today. They say July 15th, it'll be available, $200. It's just like every other, you know, smartphone. It is a big phone. It is a 4.3-inch screen. Kind of reminds me of the Evo a little bit. Although it's bigger, I think, than the Evo. It will support VCast, which is Verizon's video service, has HDMI out, DLNA compatibility. It may be just a little too big. You said, Gina, about the Evo, that it was as big as you could get and not be uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. It's bigger than the Evo.
Same size screen.
I think Pogue said in his Evo video, like, it's just like having a baby iPad to your head. and it does kind of come close to that. So if it's bigger than that, what looks like it's 4.3 inches. Isn't that what the Evo
That's
looks?
The Evo screen, but I think physically the handset is bigger.
What's with this trend of all the Android phones suddenly getting bigger and bigger and bigger? It's just not like, is it something there's any demand for? I feel like I much prefer iPhones, right, of just increasing the resolution of the screen. So
well,
you
that's
still
an
have
interesting
the same size device, but you get
right.
more stuff on the screen.
That's an interesting choice. Now, you're young with good eyes. So for you, more resolution means more real estate. It doesn't for me because I can't read tiny print and see little icons. So you have to make the stuff bigger anyway.
I think it's kind of an obvious selling point. You know, I think you can walk into a store and they can say, hey, this
Ooh,
phone's bigger than
big.
The iPad. And that's and that your kind of normal consumer will be like,
I like the Evo. The Evo resolution is the same as the old iPad. It's not bigger resolution, just bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it maybe is a response to the iPad, right? It's kind of like an iPad Nano.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think, Peter? You're an iPhone guy, right?
My main phone is still a Nexus 1 right now. I will be switching probably to a 4, iPhone 4, next week when mine comes. But I think, you know, I think both are phenomenal operating systems. I think it's really great for the consumers that we're having that choice, but... Yeah. Honestly, I think Android is going to be the bigger in terms of pure numbers. I think they will eventually overtake the iPhone. Some numbers say they already have. It's kind of debatable, but they're certainly selling at a fast rate. So, I don't know. I'm kind of here's what I don't like about Android and iPhone is that people kind of treat it like religion. So when we write about iPhone, we get all these people being like, "Oh my goodness, you're on the Apple side," or we write about Android and they say you're on Google's side. And I think I'm kind of on both sides because I think they're both kind of moving. They've kind of sped up the pace of innovation here. So,
And at least for now, let's remember that it's the, you don't have the choice of an iPhone if you're not willing to get AT&T. So I think it's great that Verizon keeps coming up with compelling handsets, right? So now you can use a Nexus One on AT&T. Now you travel, Pete, and you travel to the UK and so forth. So you have to have a GSM phone.
Yes.
There's just no question about that. But if you're a U.S. user and you're not going to leave the shores and you want Verizon or Sprint, you've got two very good choices that I think are pretty damn close to an iPhone. If not, I haven't used the new iPhone 4. Maybe they'll leapfrog, but they're certainly as good as the 3GS. You know, I was impressed. You know, you told me that HTC was good on returns.
Uh-huh.
And I got that experience. The top switch, I don't know if you've had this problem, Pete, with your Nexus One, but I got it right when Google came out with it. And, you know, this is the one thing I really don't like about Android is you always are pressing that top switch to wake it up and put it to sleep. It's not a good switch. And it's the same on the Droid, on the Evo, on all of them. It's just this little reset switch. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And it died eventually. And for a while, I thought that my non-responsive Nexus One was software. Because I'd press the switch and then but it wouldn't wake up, or I'd press the switch and it would wake up, but I couldn't do my pattern to unlock. And I thought, this ding, I wanted to throw it. And then it got to a point where I took out the battery, put it in, and I couldn't turn it on. So, it's the top switch. It's not software. Called HTC, no hold time. Maybe I was lucky, but it was a Monday morning, which is notoriously the worst time for calling support. No hold time. They said, what's your IMEI number? And I said, I can't turn it on. They said, it's in open and up, take out the battery. Oh, yeah, there it is. I gave him that number. They said, oh, hi, this is Mr. Laporte. I see yours is engraved. Now, if you want to preserve the engraving, you'll need to send us the phone. We'll fix it and send it back. We'll pay shipping. It'll take about 7 days. But they said, they were so nice. Do you have a handset to replace it? I said, yeah, I'm using this N900. And they said, well, if you want, we can just send you a new phone. We'll authorize a charge on your card, and then you ship us back the old phone. And as long as the damage is, you know, not out of warranty damage, as long as you didn't flush it down the toilet or something, we'll just make the swap. And that's what happened to you, Gina, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. It was great.
I couldn't believe it. And the phone, it's on the FedEx truck. It's going to be here today.
That's pretty phenomenal, because you remember when the Nexus One launched, most of the complaints were around Google not having like any system for dealing with complaints. So that's pretty cool.
That was my concern. I was really concerned. I thought, oh no, who do I go to? I didn't buy this from anybody. I bought it from Google. I bought it from a Python script. How am I going to get this fixed?
Well, their Python-powered customer service people are pretty good. Well, I call Google and they transfer me to HTC pretty quickly. I mean, HTC actually took care of me, right?
That's how it works. So, in fact, what I did is I Googled Nexus One support or something like that, and it came to an HTC page. It said, no, we do that. Called that number. No hold time. I should have done it immediately. I was just, I was thinking, oh, I don't want to go through this.
I know. I did the same thing. I hung onto my phone with all the dust under the screen for weeks, like feeling sad about it. And then just, you know, it took 5 minutes.
So kudos. I mean, I know that Google got a lot of heat for poor support with the Nexus One, but I was very impressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just going to basically swap it. I get it. Oh, and is this what happened to you, Gina? You get to keep your old battery and cover.
Yeah, I was really surprised about that.
So now I have two batteries.
They said, take everything out and right. So you just sent back.
Just
the shell, right?
The shell.
And then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I lose my engraving, but I gain a battery.
Yeah.
Which will be great now, because the only qualm I have about Android phones is battery life.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
How's that Evo doing for you on battery life? You lent it to a friend.
Lent it to a friend. Yeah. Yeah. Who fell in love with it and is keeping it. So.
Oh, sorry.
That makes me happy. No, that's cool.
Bye bye. You didn't want that anyway. All right, the other big, so Droid X, look for it the 15th. There are now, I'll get one just to review it, but I would say the Evo is an excellent handset. If it had better battery life, it'd be 100% from my point of view. Just tip top. I love the Nexus One. I'm going to stick with the Nexus One because I can put 2.2 on it. Mm-hmm. Although I keep hearing that they haven't pushed 2.2 at all. Did you get 2.2 yet?
No, and it's point of contention for me.
That's bizarre.
I haven't had it yet, no.
There's definitely a delay with over-the-air updates. I'm definitely getting emails from listeners and from readers who are saying, okay, so when does it come?
Yeah. Well, I just did the manual update.
I did the manual update, and I don't even think that zip file is available anymore.
Oh.
I don't think it's where it was when we did it. So,
I thought maybe I screwed it up with the manual update. But, of course, I didn't. It was hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So Pete, you're not going to do a manual update. You're just going to wait.
Oh, I might, but I'm probably going to get 4G and then use that one a lot, but I don't know. We'll see.
The Evo.
No, the iPhone.
I'll probably get a 4G and then
the 4. We don't call it the 4G. That's confusing.
Oh,
the iPhone 4.
We thought it was going to be the HD. What happened to that, huh?
Yeah. Apple! So I don't know if this will change the availability of 2.2 or not, but today Google did open source 2.2. What does that mean, Gina? You're the developer. What does that mean?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think it just means that they work on, I could be wrong about this, and so the chat room should correct me, but I think that they work on the new version kind of not in public, and then they publish the code
at
a checkpoint. Yeah, so so it's done, and now it's out there for folks to grab it.
Including OEMs like HTC and Motorola, who can now take it and make it their own.
Exactly.
Speaking of HTC, there's reports today that Apple's suing them again for patent infringement.
Right.
So that's how many times now? I don't even know.
Well, is it the old suit still going too? So it's just more, right? Piling on. Poor little HTC. They didn't have the guts to go after Google, so they go after HTC. Or is it the HTC Sense that they're not happy about?
Ars Technica says in a new lawsuit filed against HTC and several U.S. subsidiaries, Apple claims HTC's smartphones infringe on 4 more of its smartphone technology patents.
It was like the lock screen, the slide to unlock thing. God, Apple, just make a better phone. That's all. It's not hard. Don't have to sue. So good news, 2.2 open source. All right, now Gina, the big story of the day.
This is the story that made me very happy this week. Well, two stories made me very happy, but most people will be really happy about the fact that Google Voice is now open to everyone in the U.S. No invitation required.
U.S.
So you
only.
Can go to, yeah, U.S. only. So you can go to google.com/voice. You can sign up for a phone number. I believe you can pick the area. And Google Voice is really awesome. And it's been my primary phone number, actually, for more than a year. And it's literally, it's if you haven't gotten Google Voice, and a lot of people are like, what is it again? Now that it's open and I can use it, what does it do? It's basically like, I kind of feel like it's Gmail for your phone calls and your voicemail. You get a phone number and it can ring multiple phones. You can create rules about who's calling. If you set up, say, for instance, a business number, you can say, ring my phone if the call comes between 9 and 5. Send it straight to voicemail if it comes after 5 or before 9. Yeah, it's great.
You can have contact groups.
Contact groups.
With different voicemail for each.
This throws
my wife, because after my wife leaves a message, I say, hi, I'm not here. Leave a message. Love you. And she says, do you tell everybody that you love them in your voicemail? She doesn't understand that. No, that's just for you, honey.
So great. So great.
Isn't that great?
I got stuck on some like caller list. I was getting all these, not prank calls, but telemarketing calls. You can make a list, you know, a blacklist, basically.
Right. They go straight to voicemail or just don't
pick up. It's fantastic. So it lets you just create rules and it manage multiple phones. You can hop between different phones without
changing
numbers.
It's great for us, because if you have multiple phones, as all three of us do, all of them ring, or you could just say this one rings or that one rings. It's really nice. I don't have to worry about what my actual handset number is anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you read your voicemail. I hate listening to voicemail. It's like one of my biggest pet peeves. You get a transcript. The transcripts are usually laughably off, but they're good enough.
They seem like they're getting better. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. I think they are getting better. And there's no doubt in my mind that Google is making its algorithm, and its algorithm is learning.
Right.
As it goes. So it's a fantastic project, a product, and I'm really glad it's open. I'm sorry to everyone outside the U.S. I had a lot of very upset international.
I know.
We have,
almost half of our audience for the show is international, and they're gnashing their teeth right now.
Yeah.
They're so angry at us.
Yeah, we maybe better not label the point then. We actually covered it, and we were like, you know, Google Voice now open to everyone, and then instantly had like,
not everyone.
Line of comments. Not everyone outside.
Well, you ought to know better. You're in Vancouver right now, where it's not available, and you make your home in Scotland much of the time, where it's not available.
This is true. It's kind of frustrating, actually. It's one of the things, with Google TV coming up, we're going to have. There's a lot of things, iPhone release that you kind of have to work around a little bit if you're not in the U.S. most of the time. So it's a little bit challenging, this international stuff. We kind of wish that these companies would, consider the rest of the world, because it's a big market out there. But I think it's, with phones especially, it's those challenges of like international. It's kind of the old systems they're battling against, rather than them actually being like preferring the U.S. in any way.
Yeah, I give them a pass on this just because it is phone related on the international issue.
Right.
I'm sure that it's complicated with numbers and prefixes and all those things. So I feel bad for the international folks, but I kind of give Google a pass. Normally, I would expect.
Uh-oh. We will never know what Gina expects, because she's...
Uh-oh.
There, she unfroze.
Oh,
that was good.
Sorry.
I would expect... What? What would you expect? What? No, of course, it's phones. It's not... when you talk about publishing, music, or phones, all of these things don't respect... The borders are like...
And TV very soon, when Google starts getting into
exactly,
that, I think
we'll
have the same issue.
I don't know if I will... I really don't think, Pete, you're going to say, oh, gosh, I wish I had Google TV.
I do, actually.
Really?
Maybe I'll be based in the U.S. by then. I think, I want to try everything. It kind of changed my attitude. I'm kind of like, yeah, I just want to try everything. Because you never know. You never know. What's the harm in, like, trying it?
Oh, I agree. I will certainly try it. I just don't think it's going to be... I don't know. First of all, I don't even know if it's going to come out. They have these relationships with Sony and Dish and all that, but it doesn't mean you're going to see a product. And if you do, I don't know if it's going to be, something you really want. I'm skeptical.
I really think the TV is the next screen for this whole app platform to come to. And I think if Google doesn't do it, Apple will do it.
Well,
Steve
I agree
Jobs
with that.
Was kind of, he kind of overdid his denial. Remember, was it the D-Prince? He was like, no, TV will never work, and listed like a bunch of reasons why there's no way that Apple would ever get into TV, and that, you know, Apple TV is just a side project and that kind of thing.
That usually means they're going to do it.
Right. Yeah, he protests a little too much on that one. I think they're probably going to get into that next. It would be so obvious for them to do, so why not?
And they already sell all the stuff and so forth.
Well, they have the App Store, so that's just huge. I mean, if all the developers could just, you know, recode their apps to suit that really big screen, then why not?
And Google did announce last week Google Music, so they're already kind of in this space a little bit.
It would be great for gaming. I mean, I'm using my iPad for gaming as well. Why don't you just bump that up to, you know, full TV size? And that would be fantastic. So why not? I mean, they're building out a game platform. You're getting Zynga and all these other social gaming developers getting onto the App Store. It's one of the most popular app types on the App Store. So, you know, why not take on the console makers?
Well, that reminds me, Farmville just came out on the iPhone. I'll see you guys later.
Someone on Twitter tells me that the manual update for the Nexus One to Froyo was an internal build, and the official Froyo is not going over the air to the N1s just yet. So
I probably shouldn't install the phony Froyo. I just like saying phony Froyo.
Yeah, phony Froyo. The internal test build. Interesting. So what's going to happen? Is my phone going to explode when the actual official
update goes out? Was one of my concerns, is that when the update did come out, that it wouldn't update because it'd say, well, you already have it.
Yeah.
And I would like the final one. Now, of course, CyanogenMod has already announced, now that it's open sourced, that they're going to do CyanogenMod mods for Android 2.2 for Nexus One, Desire, the G1.
Nice. Old school.
Rocking it old school. MyTouch, MyTouch Slide, Evo, Hero, Android.
Yes, it's like carriers, whatever. I want CyanogenMod to get a hold of the 2.2 code. Like, that's what I'm excited about.
So that's interesting. So you wouldn't hesitate to put the CyanogenMod ROMs on there?
At this point, CyanogenMod has earned my trust. Like, I've used his stuff a few times. In fact, we should get him on the show.
Okay, deal.
Yeah.
He's probably 12 years old, but... Do you know? Is he? I mean, he probably is, right? He's probably a kid.
No, I don't think so.
When I got my first G1, okay, I hacked it. And this was cool.
I'm sorry.
This is going to work great for getting him on the show, Leo.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he can. I just really going to want him to come on.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I love you, CyanogenMod. You rock. I think he's like in his 20s, as I remember. I just like to make fun of people under 50, which means all of you. Anyway, so what would you do, Gina? Because CyanogenMod cannot distribute the Google apps. So
yeah, but he's figured that out. I think that he's figured this out, right? I think actually he worked with Google on this.
Oh, so there's a tarball or something that gives you the apps.
There's a way that you can kind of like back up the apps that you have, install his ROM, and then I believe that he was able to navigate the distribution issues.
Well, I'll do it if you will.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, we're going to do it. Will you do it too, Pete?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Oh, man. Pete, you're getting corrupted.
Pete's like, I don't care what happens to my Android phone. I'm going to have my iPhone.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't care, does he? Maybe I'll wait till July 15th when my 4 comes. Oh, no. I want to, you know, now is this, you have to root it to do this, right?
Yes.
Well, I mean, speaking of which, that kind of relates to the whole, like, okay, Android's more open deal, but there's reports this week, and I don't know if they've kind of been, I think they were kind of,
I think this is
debunked
BS.
A little bit, but there was reports that maybe up to 20% of Android apps were possibly spyware.
This comes from S-Mobile Systems.
Yeah, they sent us a press release. I'm kind of skeptical on it. I think it's kind of an overestimate, but I think there's something to it where when you have a more open system, you have a lot more opportunity to take advantage.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, we've seen malicious apps in the App Store. Because nobody's vetting them.
Right. And I think it's kind of remarkable how this whole how this whole setup is echoing the whole Windows versus Mac setup with Android. I mean, that's been said, but even on the spyware side, on the exploit side, it would appear that Android is lining up to be the Windows. And I wonder if that'll eventually cut into their popularity if you know, people are trying to avoid apps to take advantage of them.
You want secure. I think it's probably you could make a good case that something like the iPad, which is completely locked down, or the iPhone.
I don't know. There's some kind of Safari issue, isn't there? It hasn't been updated.
Oh, this is a big issue. Yeah, because Apple pushed out updates for its all of its platforms with iOS 4, except the iPad. And in that push, there were 65 vulnerabilities that were, I think half of them were critical. So you've got 30-plus critical vulnerabilities, vulnerabilities which allow for remote code execution, which is as bad as it gets, unpatched on the iPad now.
Right, which is kind of the counter-argument that closed systems are just as vulnerable to whoever's managing the system making a mistake and not noticing. So it's that, you know, half dozen of one, six of the other.
So, Gina, it's my understanding that when you root a phone, that normally you unlock the bootloader.
Yes.
And this is a bad thing because then they can tell you messed with your phone or what?
Who can tell? Like your
the Google police.
Or?
I don't know.
The Google police.
I don't know. Somebody's saying it's going to void your warranty, but if you don't mess with the bootloader, it doesn't void your warranty. And apparently there's a way to do the rooting without messing with the bootloader.
Really? It's been a while. I rooted my G1 back in the day, and then I was like, I want to have the full. Right. I haven't rooted my Nexus One, so I'm actually not sure. I mean, the reality is you can reset it. From what I understand, you can
seems
reset
like
it
could go back to the
factory.
Original.
Without
just
a problem.
Do a full erase or something. Yeah.
This report about spyware
bogus.
It could be considered malicious or suspicious. This is like saying, I mean, anything could be anything.
It's based on permissions. So
based on permissions and other attributes. So like, just because something listens to your key presses doesn't mean it's a key logger. Right. You know what I mean? I mean, there's, I don't know.
I got to say though, those screens do freak you out a little bit when you first get an Android phone. It says, hey, this app wants to be able to make phone calls and
I like
your
it.
Location.
I like it because unlike Apple, they tell you. In fact, this is even what Apple says. Steve Jobs said this at the D conference about privacy. You tell them again, then you tell them again. And I think it's good to give people information. You're right. It's a little scary for somebody who doesn't. But it's better to have the information than just say, okay, no problem.
I agree with you, Leo, but I've become sort of desensitized to it now.
Like, me too.
I've
installed
so many apps. And the other thing is that when the app tells you, I need network access, I need this, I need that, it doesn't explain why. So I find myself asking, like, what does this app do, you know, that makes
You're
me,
right.
and can I opt out of that feature? Or, you know, I wish it was just a little more informative. I don't know. Some people would argue that maybe it's a little too much information. But I wish I could say, like, oh, I know that this app does this thing, and this is why it needs access to my network. This is why it may pull data. So I think it could be refined a little bit so that you can make a more informed decision. Because right now it's either yes or no, right? And now I just tap yet. I mean, I just...
What are you going to say? No? You downloaded it. You want it.
Right, exactly. So I'm like, okay.
You could make the point that information is meaningless because you're going to say yes no matter what it says. It's like the... Apple pushed a 45-page updated terms of service for iTunes 9.2. 45 pages. You're looking at it on your iPhone. And it says...
That's worse than Facebook.
It says, would you like to read this or just accept it? And it's, I'm going to sit here, read 45 pages on my iPhone? What are you, crazy?
Right, it's ridiculous. You know, there's some of those EULAs that like check to see whether or not you scroll down to the end?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's funny. So what do you do? Yeah. Scroll.
Right,
done.
Exactly.
I read it all. We're going to take a break and come back with more, lots more to talk about. I'm so glad Pete Cashmore is here from Mashable.com. Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org. Again, if you just tuned in, Jeff Jarvis is midair. He was flying to Chicago. He's speaking in Chicago tonight. We had hoped to get him on, but he was stuck, as always. Chicago's a tough airport. In the winter, it's snow. In the summer, it's thunderstorms. You can't win. So Jeff's not with us. He'll be back next week. Meanwhile, I would like to tell you about backup. You know, this is so important. One of the things I really love about the Nexus One and the Android operating system, when I get that new handset, I log into my Google account and boom, pow, wow, all the stuff is immediately restored. I don't have to worry about backup on Android. I wish all devices were like that. If you're using a Mac or Windows, you know you're responsible for backing up. And if you're going to back up, you got to do it right automatically because nobody remembers. Don't be one of those people who says, oh, yeah, I'll back up every week. Look, I got this great external drive. I'll do that. 3 months later, your hard drive dies and you go, ooh, I forgot. should be automatic. And by the way, you find a backup to an external drive, but that's not the end of it, because what if, you know, there's a fire or a flood, or you're living in the Portola Valley and there's an earthquake and boom, you lose it all. You got a backup offsite. Carbonite does that too. 128-bit encryption, SSL, backs it right up to the cloud. You can use AES 256 to encrypt it before it's sent, and only you have the password to that, so you really have privacy. I'm going to do this on my daughter's. She's taking a MacBook to college. You bet Carbonite's going on it, so that I don't get that call middle of the night. I lost my paper. I lost my notebook. I lost my hard drive. It's always backed up. And anywhere you can get online, you can get that data back. Even there's even an iPhone app. Try it free, 15 days, no credit card needed. Carbonite.com, offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G. And if you decide to buy 2 months free when you use TWIG as the offer code, Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite.
Good news from Twitter. Several people say that those of us who manually installed the Nexus One update to 2.2 will get the over-the-air update because it is a different build number.
Oh, fantastic. So,
yeah, so
I think
great.
I kept that zip file. So I should be able to. I'm sure I kept it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you won't need it because you'll get the over-the-air update and it'll be the official right. build. And I'm also told that you can get around unlocking the bootloader on the N1 when you flash
Twitter's
it.
Twitter's amazing.
I know, Twitter is amazing. It is amazing.
All we have to do is say one thing wrong or ask a question and boom!
I know, it's fantastic. There are even a few people urging Cyanogen on Twitter to accept when we ask him to come on the show.
They don't mention the thing, the little 12-year-old snark.
Yeah. No, hopefully okay, they won't say anything about that.
Man, Leo was so snarky about you. You ought to come on and set him straight. He probably could beat my ass. Okay, moving along. Microsoft going after Google Apps with a switchers campaign. We were talking before the show started, Pete and I. He said, you know, you're smart to do a Google show because Google's taken off. Yep, it's Google. These days it's Google, Facebook, Apple. I said, what about Microsoft? What did you say, Pete?
Yeah, so Microsoft's kind of out of the game right now in terms of mobile OS, at least.
They've got a new Xbox 360. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Well, they got Kinect. Big deal. They
yeah,
are
Kinect's the last big thing they did that actually got some coverage and looks pretty innovative.
They do have
kind of not going anywhere.
They do have.
You have the Kin, Leo. You going to get a Kin?
No, I thought the Kin was kind of cute. If it, you know, if I wanted five phones, I guess I'd get a Kin. It would be the fifth, though, right? Because you want the Evo, the Nexus One, the iPhone 4, the Droid X. Maybe then a Kin.
What OS does the Kin run anyway? Wasn't
it's
you know, Microsoft was kind of
it's betwixt and between. It's not Windows Phone 7 yet. It's using this Zune interface, you know, this...
Really? Because wasn't it Ballmer that was like, oh, Google has so many operating systems, I can't keep track.
Yeah, that was called... Talk about the pot calling the kettle black.
Microsoft, I didn't even know what Kin was running, so...
It's not 6.5, it's not 7, it's 6.75, I guess. Anyway, the Kin looks pretty cool. I like the idea of social on a phone. I think it's aimed at, you know, people your age, not my age, but... So Microsoft does have, and I don't think that they've done a very good job marketing it, a fairly credible cloud solution. Office for the web looks great.
And Office 2010, right, just got released.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal. And it talks to, you know, you can save files to the web, right?
They've got SharePoint, which a lot of big businesses use instead of Google Docs.
That's the thing. I think there are a lot of people in big business and corporate situations are really excited about Office 2010 and Windows 7 and kind of the new thing, those new things. I think that we don't. You know, because we're kind of freelancers or small business people, we don't use those things. But Office 2010 is pretty cool, I hear. And it's kind of nice. It has like live typing, kind of like Wave collaborative typing. You could set up a SharePoint.
Exactly.
You know, your own SharePoint installation and collaborate that way. So, you know, that's something.
We're working on an enterprise show because I know we need to cover this. We do cover it a little bit on Windows Weekly. But have you ever heard of BPOS? Anybody? Bueller? No, this is what it is. This is what Microsoft's pushing. Business Productivity Online Standard Suite. Well named, isn't it?
BPOS.
This Google or Bing BPOS. This is what Microsoft wants you to use instead of Google Docs. And I presume, I would hope, if you are in... Oh, look, they want to chat with me. No, I don't think so. Welcome to Microsoft. I can assist you with your questions. I think Clippy is in BPOS.
Would you like to make a list?
No.
It looks like you're trying to switch away from Google.
It looks like you're trying to switch from Google. VPOS is a set of messaging and collaboration solutions hosted by Microsoft. It consists of Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Office Live Meeting, and Office Communications Online. Maybe this is the kind of marketing that works in enterprise. Maybe that's all I can think of.
Well, it's super safe, isn't it? It's always safe to continue on with Microsoft products. I think it's a battle they need to win because, you know, right now, what is Microsoft? It's the OS and it's, you know, Office. And they're definitely got no play in the future of the OS, which is mobile. It's going to be Android versus the iOS. So, you know, Microsoft really needs to fight that battle against Google on the whole Office space thing, or they're going to lose every battle that matters to them.
And they need better marketing than a switcher campaign, to be honest with you. But that's what they're doing.
Honestly, I think the product is more of a problem than marketing right now. I mean, if you look at Bing, really hard marketing drive on that one. They're spending a lot of marketing.
But do you like those Bing ads, those TV ads? I find them very bizarre and upsetting. You know what I'm talking about?
Bing is a sponsor, I think.
Oh, we love Bing. God bless Bing.
I think never... Google probably is on some level as well, you know.
You don't have to moderate your opinion because they're a sponsor. That's not.
No. I think.
I certainly wouldn't.
I think Bing has done better than most people expected it to do. If you'd said a few years ago Microsoft's going to make a real play and get a few percentage points of the search market, they haven't really taken it off Google, though. They've been taking it off other people.
Tell me what this is an ad for. Just watch this or listen to this ad. Tell me what this is an ad for. Oh, it's a private video. Oh, please.
Their ad's private.
We're like, never mind.
That's innovation right there.
That's innovation. Let me see if this other one is private as well.
Hey, Dad, did you pick me out a cell phone?
Cell walls are thicker than plasma membranes and were originally discovered by Robert Hooke in a sample of cork.
Okay. So I guess that means you didn't find me a phone?
Thousands of telephone poles are destroyed each year by woodpeckers. Woodpeckers also nest in the cavities of trees.
Do you not find this disturbing?
Celebrity mom has another one on the way.
What? Sucker mom.
Hat moms.
Mom jeans.
Moms who wear jeans to match their teens' jeans.
I hate these ads. They scare the hell out of me. They're like the Stepford Wives.
The search overload.
Yeah, the premise is that, and it's, by the way, not at all obvious, typical bad Microsoft marketing. The premise is that these people are responding with what they would have gotten had they searched for those terms, but you can't tell. It just seems like they're cracked. Here's another one here.
Hey, did you ever find tickets to Hawaii?
Hawaii 5-0. Book 'em, Dano. Aloha. Mele Kalikimaka. Surf lingo. Bruh, I was stoked when I caught that tasty barrel.
Seriously, did you price out tickets?
How to beat a traffic ticket. 10 proven methods traffic courts don't want you to
what
know.
What are you talking
talk
about?
Talk turkey.
What?
Talk live with hot singles in your area. They're waiting.
Who's waiting?
See, I guess that's you
at Bing.com.
Bing. But we love Bing because they are a sponsor of Mashable.com.
They sponsor a lot of cool things, I have to say. I see that they sponsor The Soup, which is one of my favorite, like, it's a, you know, cable
love the soup
clip show. Love the soup. Yeah, so, and whenever I see the Bing ad.
I don't know. I might be just me because the chat room's saying, love these ads. They're great. They're wonderful. Ha. Ah. So maybe
they're trying something a little bit different. They're trying something a little bit, yeah, unusual.
So I was ripping them because of BPOS, which, by the way, could you pick a worse acronym? It's wrong on two levels. First of all, it could be the British Petroleum Operating System. Bad. Or could it be a big POS? Bad. There's no good interpretation of BPOS. But they're not, you know, that's fine. They're not known for great marketing, and that's just the way I think it is. Microsoft.
Well, I don't know. Their PC campaign did pretty well.
Did you like that?
The numbers. Well, it did well according to the numbers. I mean, it was kind of a reaction to the whole Mac ads with the whole Switch campaign, which
they
did
need to respond. They did need to respond to that. All right, I'm not going to.
But it did well. I mean, in terms of, I think it was like price perception. Young people were perceiving PCs to be more affordable and better value for money. You know, we discussed that
on
the previous show.
Yeah, it worked.
So it worked for them.
Okay. All right.
Sometimes it works.
Let's see here. Google Maps Mania. I love this real-time London tube map. This is a really interesting
mashup. That's so cool. People should check that out if they haven't already.
So I don't know how you do this. This is using Google Maps, but this actually shows where the trains are in the London Underground in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's awesome.
I guess you could fire this up on your phone and see how soon before the train arrived.
Oh my God, I need this for New York.
I tried it on my iPad and it wasn't working.
Oh, it didn't? It's using Flash. But look at these trains here. You can actually see them moving.
It could have just been overloaded, though, because it was on the day that it got a bunch of coverage.
I wonder if it wouldn't be Flash, would it? I mean,
I don't think so.
It's so cool. You can click on the stations for a local map of that station. Yeah, you need this in New York, don't you, Gina?
Yes, I would love to see this in New York. Although, compared to London, New York's subway system isn't so good.
It's a little more complicated.
It's a little more complicated, yeah. And they won't tell you like how many minutes until a train arrives or anything like that.
Bakerloo train to Elephant and Castle. I just love British stuff. Left Baker Street Station, expected Regent's Park Station in 2.5 minutes. I love this.
That's awesome.
It's great.
Really cool.
Metropolitan train to Uxbridge, left Baker Street Station, expected Finchley Road Station in 6 minutes. Hammersmith and Circle train to Richmond, left Westminster Station, expected St. James Park Station in 2.5 minutes. You know, if you really want to do this right, you'd do it in the accent of each of these regions. Hey, Piccadilly train left Clown at the Caledonian Road Station.
I didn't realize Australia was
the reason. Yeah, no, I have a limited repertoire. They all sound the same to me. I'm sorry. I apologize, Pete.
No, London accents are super challenging. Even if you're British, you need to be a Londoner to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Just do the rhyming slang. Yeah, that's a really neat aspect of mashups. I've never seen a real-time one like that. That's very cool.
We have to talk about Google CL.
Okay, Google CL. You're excited. What is it?
We got to talk about Google CL. It is a command line interface to a bunch of Google APIs, which I really dig because I'm in a terminal all the time, and I wrote this kind of command line to do task manager.
Yes,
so this
I love
is kind of like right
that.
Up right up my alley. So basically, once you install it, it's Python. So you can install it, you know, Mac or PC. With PC, you'll need like something like Cygwin. But you can type out a command line, something like
This is a download.
Yeah, it's a download. You have to download it, install it. And when you do, if you type Google at a command line, you get kind of a bunch of options. You can access Picasa, Docs, Calendar. So you can type something like, you know, Google Calendar lists, and it'll give you a list of events from your calendar.
Oh my God.
Which is awesome. You can, and so you get all kind of the shell scripty goodness that you get, you know, in any script, right? So you can cron things, you can echo and cat things, you can edit a Google Doc in VI. You can
you're kidding.
Yeah, no, seriously, you can. In fact, on the friend feed, I linked Lifehacker did a great feature, like five ways that you can use Google CL. You can cron backups. So you can say every night, you know, go through my document list and save them in Google Docs, for example. You can pass the Google Docs command an editor parameter and specify the editor you want to use. And it definitely works with Vim and Nano, I think. It's super cool.
So what do you need? Do you need Python? Could you do this on Windows? It's easy on the Mac because Mac has Python.
Yeah, you can totally do it on Windows. If you have something like Cygwin.
Cygwin would let you do it.
Yeah,
okay.
You can do it on Windows. So yeah, it's really neat. I actually have it. I use Geek Tool on the Mac, which is like a heads-up display. It can embed text.
Oh, it goes on your desktop. So yeah, are you Geek Tooling Google? What are you putting on there?
I Geek Tool like today's events on my calendar.
It's super neat.
And I'm gonna build an extension to my task manager, which lets you like kind of add a command to your to-do list and also schedule it on your calendar in one shot. Really, really neat. I mean, not obviously useful to normals, but certainly to your listeners.
To us.
To us.
We're
yeah,
not
to
normals.
Anyone who is in a terminal on a fairly regular basis. We'll really kind of enjoy this. I also have it. I set up my Bash profile so that when I launch a terminal, it actually shows me my events for the day.
Oh,
you know,
neat.
Kind of at the prompt.
So you put it in your prompt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's in my prompt. Yep. Yeah. I kind of.
Would you post that on smarterware.org? I want to see your prompt.
I did. It just says next 24 hours and then lists the the events in my calendar.
So every time you hit return, it does that.
No, just when you launch a new window.
Just when you launch a window, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the one thing that runs before the first prompt. It's not my prompt. It's just the first thing that happens before my initial prompt.
That is so funny.
So it's neat. It's really pretty neat. I haven't messed around with the docs editor yet, but that in and of itself is
well, it makes sense. This is how they came up with it. They say in the blog post that we wanted to upload a photos to a folder on Picasa without launching an application. We wanted to do it from the command line.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's obvious. That's great, and so it gives you access to the full API. What do you have access to?
If you type Google, once you have it installed, if you type Google at the command line, you get into an interactive command line. So you can just type help, and it'll show you all the commands that are available. It's Picasa, Docs, Calendar, and then you can say Google. You know, you can say Calendar help, then you can see all the calendar specific options and parameters.
You could probably do searches too.
I'm not sure if search is in the list. Let's see.
Wow, it just seems like there's all sorts of ways you could use this with scripts and stuff.
Yeah, totally. No, search isn't included. It's Picasa Blogger, so you can actually write a blog post at the command line, which I don't know when you'd ever want to do that, but you can. I mean, you can fetch blog posts. You could you could have a blog backup script, for example. You can post to YouTube, so docs. Oh, contacts. You can also export your contacts to a CSV every once in a while.
So if you're using Google Voice, this would be very useful.
And calendar. So hopefully,
post to YouTube. Hey, this is actually good because we do currently post to YouTube programmatically.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so you can totally use this.
I'm sure they're doing some sort of weird scraping thing. I don't even know how they would do that, but this would make that much easier. Wow. Mm-hmm. So if you have Python, is it 2.5 that you need? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Very cool.
It worked really. I just installed on my Mac just the Google part.
I think that's what the Mac comes with 2.5.
Yeah, I think the Mac does ship with 2.5.
It's Apache license. And there's a Debian or a Tarball you can get. Look at that. This is so cool. And it looks like they're what is this CL this Q code? This what is that? QL code? What is that? That's the file download URL. Okay.
Is it the file download or is it just the MD5?
Well, I was wondering if it was the checksum, but when I hover the mouse over, it says the link. So
I guess you could install it on your phone?
There's no command line in Android, is there?
Actually there is. Isn't there like an Android scripting environment, the ASE?
I would like that.
Interesting.
I would like that.
Yeah. So really, really digging the Google CL.
Okay.
Loving it. I want more. More, please, Google.
And that wasn't even Gina's tool of the week. Wow. Very geeky stuff. Good, though. I like it. Anything else we want to talk about before we get to our tip, tool, and number of the week? Dell is looking at Chrome OS for a future Dell, tablets, notebooks? What? That's an interesting thought. It was an interview with Dell's president for Greater China and South Asia. He told Reuters, quote, "We have to have a point of view on the industry and technology direction 2 and 3 years down the road. So we continually work with Google on this." Amit Midha says he also expects Chrome and Android to be part of a new form of computing. So Dell is doing a smartphone, but I wonder if maybe the Dell Streak, which is... isn't that the big phone with the big screen?
The Dell Streak is huge. Just like massive. In between an iPad and an iPhone kind of size.
Maybe so, that will run Android. That would be very interesting.
I think the real loser in this is Microsoft again, with Dell obviously shipping a bunch of Microsoft PCs right now. And suddenly everyone's jumping to Chrome to replace the kind of the full Windows 7 experience, where they're jumping to Android on the phone. So it's really Microsoft's loss is Google's gain right now.
Yeah, this is Android. Oh, this is sweet. Very sweet. The Dell Streak. Got to take a look at that. Looks like Asia only, but... wait a minute. This story says Dell Streak will probably be sold by a U.S. carrier at some point.
I'm going to imagine that Chrome is going to be more of their netbook OS.
Right.
And that Android is going to be their mobile and tablet OS. It would make more sense to echo what's already happening with iOS on the iPad and the iPhone.
That's what Dell said at the D8 conference, that they, in fact, would sell it unlocked in the U.S. but via a wireless carrier. $500 on Dell.com. That could be a very surprising sleeper product for Dell. Could be a big deal. All right, we're going to take a break because we got to keep going here. We got another show to do in a few minutes, and I want to get our guests out the door because I know... Oh! My Nexus One came. Thank you. And I have I have something else to do.
Nice.
I've got a phone to charge. Before we get to our tip and tool and number of the week, I'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the show. Very excited about iStock Photo.
Oh, cool.
You know about them.
Yeah, I've used them.
Yeah, they're great.
I love iStock Photo. Anybody, yeah, we use them for a lot of our images. Sure. They're really good.
Anybody who blogs knows about them because it's a great way to get affordable images, licensed images for your blog. In fact, if you go to iStockPhoto.com/twig, you can get a special deal on royalty-free stock images, media, and design elements. Oops, don't do T-I-G. Do T-W-I-G. I don't know what T-I-G gave me, something odd. I guess that's a person. Oh, here it is. Welcome all Twig listeners. 15% off credits if you join right now. They're the original source for high-quality stock images, design elements, all royalty-free, used by bloggers like Pete and Gina, by designers, by advertisers, entrepreneurs. They offer not just photos. You know, the name really is a little deceptive. Illustrations and vector images, videos, music and sound effects, flash files, 3D renders, and logos coming soon. Incredible visuals. They make it very easy. And you can get 15% off bundles of 50 credits or more right now by going to iStockPhoto.twig. And I don't know if I should mention this on this show, but they do have a Microsoft Office plugin that makes it really easy to use. And coming soon, an iPhone app. I love this idea. You'd be able to use an iPhone app to get to your iStock photos and get some royalty-free illustrations. iStockPhoto.com/twig. Yeah, they really are a great company. They're kind of the company for doing this.
Yep.
If you're in the business, do what Pete and Gina do. iStockPhoto.com/twig. Gina, oh Gina, time for your tip of the week.
I have two quick tips.
Yes.
First one, for Android users, I just discovered this week and I blew my mind. I had no idea it was there. While you're typing on the default Android keyboard in Froyo, If you swipe your finger up above the keyboard, it will extend two more rows with numbers and punctuation marks. So you don't actually have to type. Yeah. You don't have to tap the period to switch to the parentheses or the 1, 2, 3. You can and it took me a couple of times to get it right, but now I have it every time.
That's awesome.
Just swipe your finger up and it extends two more rows. So you can see I have a picture of it there on my blog that Leo is up on screen.
You must have 2.2 to do this though.
Yeah, it's only 2.2. Yeah, and it's really handy, especially for question marks and exclamation points. I use it all the time. Just swipe up, and you keep your finger on the screen, and then you just release when you hit the key that you want, and it adds it to the.
Doesn't that conflict with the swipe up to record thing?
So you swipe left to right to start like voice to text.
Oh, that's right. It's left to right.
Yeah.
So this is up and down. Okay.
Yeah. So this is up. So you just take your finger and swipe it right up above the top of the keyboard and extends out. And it extends out actually over your text, word suggestion list. But it's just numbers and a little common punctuation.
Will it stay there or does it go away?
Yeah, it goes away. When you release,
swipe up and hold and then pick what you want.
Swipe up, hold, you release on the key that you want and then it just snaps back in.
This might be a reason to leave swipe behind.
Yeah, it might be.
Are you still using swipe?
I actually switched back to the default keyboard. Because of this, yeah. So I'm giving it another go this week. Tip number two is for iPhone users who have iOS. You can now sync your iPhone's notes to Gmail. I haven't tried this myself, but Google Operating System wrote it up and I linked it on the friend feed. In your Gmail account information, you can turn syncing on notes and it actually shows up in your Gmail account under a label. So before it was apparently really difficult for iPhone users to sync notes, but this is a good sort of cloud, notes to cloud solution. So that's for iPhone users because we're always talking about Android users here. So.
Oh, I see why they wanted me to keep the battery in back. They didn't include one. So you don't have two batteries.
I don't. You know, when you said that, I was kind of like,
I thought I would get a phone with a battery in the back, but it doesn't have one.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for you. I was kind of like, maybe I did ship back the battery. No, I didn't.
No, you only get one.
They just sent me the body. Sorry about that, Leo. I didn't want to bust your bubble, but I was kind of like, I don't have two batteries. I wish that I did.
Google has busted my bubble. HTC busted my bubble. Two great tips. Thank you, Gina.
Sure.
Just the greatest. We let Pete Cashmore do a number today.
I do. I have two numbers. My first number is 160,000. That's the number of Android devices being activated every day, according
Whoa.
To Google. So it was Andy Rubin at the DroidX event this morning.
Wait a minute. 160,000 times 31. Let me see. Let me do the math. That's almost 5 million handsets a month.
Sure, and that's versus the 100,000 that they were getting activated per day when that they announced at Google I.O. So really good growth rates for Android activations. I feel like eventually Android's going to win out in that battle of just the sheer number of phones that are running Android versus iOS. They're just going to win on volume.
That's not no kidding. Wow.
Is on the volume of apps, although they're growing really fast. So that's the second number, 68,000. That's the number of apps now in the marketplace.
Apple's got, what, 250,000? But the point, if you've got 68,000, that means usually you have enough to cover the bases. All you need is the one app that you need. If you don't need five fart applications, if you've got the one.
It's kind of interesting, and I appreciate Gina's view on this, but the thing we see about Android app development is while in theory you're eventually going to have a lot more devices running your apps, the disadvantage is that people really don't seem to be paying for Android apps to the degree that they're paying for iPhone apps.
Right.
There was a report out this week about, there was some tiny percentage of Android apps are paid versus, people are really paying for things on the iPad and iPhone. And I'm interested to see if that kind of hurts developer interest, because obviously developers really gung-ho with like more devices, more openness, more freedom. But if there's less revenue, I wonder if that might kind of be a counterpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the revenue conversation is definitely something that comes into play. I think that Android attracts a certain kind of developer, which is an open source developer, who's used to releasing things that are generally free. So I think it's kind of like, but I also think that mobile app developers who want to make money, whose goal is, to make some money, are going to go to the iPhone because a bigger market, market share, market distribution, but also because I think that there's this perception that people don't pay for apps on Android.
I wonder if that's fair, though. Is that fair?
There's tons of apps on Android that I would pay for if I could, but they don't have a price on them. I think that developers generally make their apps free because that's just part of the open source culture. I think that's just a cultural thing for that kind of developers.
I think you can make money on Android, absolutely.
I would encourage Android developers who make great apps to charge for them. Charge a buck or two. Make some money. Enjoy.
Enjoy, live.
It's okay.
The advantage that iPhone and iPad have there is that everyone's so trained with iTunes. They've got their credit card
it's
in
really
there.
Easy.
It's like a behavioral thing.
Yep.
The whole world is trained now to put their credit card into iTunes, and then they get their iPhone or their iPad, and they're just already set up to go.
Although, it's your Google checkout on Android, so I have the same experience.
Yeah, but does anyone really... I mean, I consider myself a heavy Google checkout user, and I really am not crazy for the user experience there. We buy a lot of our, on Google Apps and that kind of thing. And I don't think it's
okay. I'll make a counter argument. One of the things I really like about the Android store is if you buy an app, download it and don't like it and delete it immediately, you have, 48 hours to get a refund. It will refund you the money automatically.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And
That's really great. The iPhone doesn't do that.
One of the reasons you don't necessarily try masses of paid iPhone apps is exactly that reason. Like, it's risk.
There's no way to try it.
Yeah, I mean, you want to try something out, and 99 cents is a good price to try something out without having a big commit. But yeah, it's obviously better if you can get a refund.
So you haven't had that happen to you, Gina, but I frequently download applications and go, oh, what did I buy that for? You delete it within a day, you get the money back.
I didn't realize that. That's great.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't know about that. Two good numbers, at least good numbers if you're Google. Two very encouraging numbers. My tool of the week, very simple tool, but something new added to a Google Docs. It allows you to do kind of in a primitive way, a little OCR now in Google Docs for images and PDFs. So details, I apologize for this on Read Write Web, but you can also go to the Google Operating System blog. They've been playing this with this for a couple of months, and you'll see when you upload PDFs, or images, there's a new checkbox, convert text from PDF or image files to Google Documents. And ReadWriteWeb says that it does work better with PDFs than JPEGs. But I think that's kind of a nice feature. So you'll see that in the upload area. When you're doing the upload, you have a checkbox that can turn that feature on.
Google CL needs a parameter for this.
Yeah, no kidding. Then you'd have... Command
then you
line OCR.
But you could scan business cards and like cron them.
Yeah, cron them.
All right, I'm just going to shut up now.
It's just a cron job away. That's why I like Gina. Gina's always thinking, where is that to-do, the command line to-do thing?
Todotext.com.
Todotext?
TXT. TXT. Yeah, like the... .com, and that'll redirect you to the page. Yeah, and there we go.
There it is. The Todotext command line interface.
Yes.
This is a Merlin Mann kind of a thing.
Totally. Yeah. This is totally like early life hacker, obsessed with text files work.
We still are.
We still are. Text files, they never get old.
They never get
go
old.
Out of style. They're like black. They're the new black.
And soon with Googleicious features. Did you write this in Python? It's shell.
It's bash.
It's all
bash.
Shell. Oy.
Yeah, shell. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I don't know why I made that decision.
That's nuts.
If I were to do it again, I would have done it in Python.
As anybody's written any shell, the bash scripts, it's just weird.
Yeah. It is weird. It is weird.
I now install Z shell whenever I get a command line, a Linux or Mac. I just put Z shell on it. I just say, I'm not going to mess with this.
Mm-hmm.
Although the shell scripting is just as stupid. And you can find her blog, smarterware.org. Her book is The Complete Guide to Google Wave at completewaveguide.com. And
yep.
She's a great regular on this show. We always loved having her on. And how great. I thank you for the beta invite, by the way.
Sure. To Think Tank.
Really right neat. Now, are you going to open that up? I guess you're just running it on your own server. So people are supposed to install it on their server.
I'm getting folks with interesting data on there so I can test. So thank you for trying
I gave
for
you a lot of data, probably.
Yeah, you gave me a lot of data. Absolutely.
What do I do with it now, though? Is there anything I can do with it?
Well, you should ask some questions and see what kind of replies you get back.
Okay.
And
do some queries.
Do some queries and see how far your retweets reach and that kind of thing. So I'm going to add a few more features.
Fun.
I'll email you about that.
It's extremely polished. I mean, it's really beautiful. It's really nice what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for the OAuth tokens.
I love knowing geeks because then you get emails like that. Hey, thanks for the OAuth tokens. It's really been great. Pete Cashmore, he's a geek. He's a little too good looking to be a geek, but yeah, he's a geek. He's the guy who runs Mashable.com, Mashable.com. It is a must read for anybody who wants to follow what's going on in the net. Really, I find it incredibly authoritative and useful, and just fantastic site. And we love talking to you. Thank you, Pete.
Thanks, Theo.
We're going to hear more from him because I think he's going to move down our way sometime soon. Thank you all for being here. We do this show live every Wednesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. That would be 2000 UTC at live.twit.tv. You can also subscribe to the audio or video downloads. Just go to twit.tv/twig for all the subscription information. Plays back on all the platforms you've come to know and love. Coming up in just a minute, right after this show, every day, Monday through Friday at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, Tom Merritt and Tech News Today, our brand new daily news wrap-up. Really great. You stay tuned for that. I'm Leo Laporte. We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google.